If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Good afternoon. For Talk Radio News Service, I'm Jeff Holtzman. Senator Marco Rubio is advising Americans to document their struggles with signing up for insurance plans under Obamacare. In a statement today, the Florida Republican cautioned customers who have had trouble with healthcare.gov that they should create a record of their experience for when the IRS comes calling next year. The law requires Americans who can afford to purchase health insurance to do so or else pay a fine on their taxes starting in 2014. Many are concerned, however, that if the federal website does not improve, they'll be blocked from enrolling in a plan and will therefore be subject to the tax penalty. The White House, meanwhile, says it has hired a team of web experts to get the site running smoothly.
These are additional contractors as well as a few experts who are part of the Presidential Innovation Fellows Program, which was started by the President in his first term, and it pairs top innovators from the private sector, nonprofits, and academia with top innovators within government.
Spokesman Jay Carney. Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
Kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living's dying, that's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Inside Tennessee is sponsored by the Tennessee Action Council, an educational organization dedicated to restoring constitutionally limited government and the Judeo-Christian values that made our country great. Visit our website at tn4action.com. That's tn4action.com. The phone call to call in and join the conversation is 718-305-7176. That is 718-305-7176. Welcome, everybody. I appreciate you tuning in. I want to apologize. We had some technical difficulties last week. My internet was down and went down not long before the show and didn't come back on until well after the show. So I do apologize for that. But we've got a great set of guests lined up tonight. We've got Rob Krieger. He's one of our members of the Tennessee Action Council. And he is going to be talking about the issue of abortion, which, you know, as we mentioned in our opening, Tennessee Action Council sponsors this show, and we're dedicated to Judeo-Christian values, and one of those values is, of course, the issue of life. And the Tennessee Action Council, one of our first projects, we actually call it Project 2014, you can see it on our website, is in reference to the Amendment 1, which will be on a Tennessee ballot in 2014. It's a constitutional amendment to make the Supreme Court neutral on the issue of abortion. Now, some of you are probably thinking, well, you know, why make it neutral? Why not make it completely illegal? Well, to get any kind of legislation in Tennessee, you're going to have to initially make our state constitution neutral. You know, as long as Roe v. Wade is in effect, we won't be able to completely outlaw abortion in Tennessee anyway. So the first thing we have to do within our state is to make the Tennessee constitution neutral. It was pretty much deemed neutral for years and years till about 2000. We did have some decent restrictions on abortion prior to the year 2000, but in the year 2000 that changed. Anyway, Rob will join us here in just a minute. We'll talk about that some more. Our other guest, we're going to have Representative Sheila Butt, one of the staunch conservatives in the House. She's going to talk with us a little bit about some upcoming legislation this session. Representative Judd Matheny is going to join us later on in the show. He's going to give us an update of what we can expect for the November 12th. We're going to have the second meeting of the Joint Legislative Advisory Committee, which is essentially a committee that looks at federal laws and federal mandates, especially those involving money, through a 10th Amendment lens. That's the best way to put it. They look at it, hey, is this a violation of the 10th Amendment? You know, is this something that a federal program, for instance, that cost us state dollars. And he's also going to talk about the Bilateral Commission. And if you haven't heard about that, make sure you tune in. That's really interesting, and it's really landmark if we get it going. So that'll be a good segment of the show. And then last but certainly not least, we've got Kathy Henners from DailyRollCall.com. And we're going to continue our little trek through the Muslim Brotherhood's plan for North America as laid out in their explanatory memorandum, which was, by the way, entered into evidence in the Holy Land Foundation trial back in 2007-2008, and basically laid out their plan. It was introduced as evidence, and so it's something that our federal government did know was a problem, but apparently they seem to have forgotten that. So she's going to talk about that. Plus, she's also got some good news for us, a little surprise. So we look forward to talking to Kathy a little later on this evening. All right. Bob should call in here any second now. But I want to go back a little bit to the Tennessee Action Council. Once again, the number is 718-305-7176 if you want to call in, you have a question or a comment. In reference to abortion in Tennessee, and a lot of people don't know this, since 2000, since the Tennessee Supreme Court basically said that in Tennessee, a woman's right to an abortion would still exist within the state constitution, even if Roe v. Wade were overturned. So what that did was that wiped out some good legislation that was on the books, and it prevents us from putting any, you know, reasonable restrictions on abortion in the state of Tennessee. So making it neutral is the first step. It's a long process. There's a lot of information out there that we have to get to people. And so people would understand that, you know, this is something that we have to do. It's just a first step. Well, I believe we have Bob on the line here. Bob, are you with us? Hello? Can you hear me, Bob? Okay, why don't you give us a call back here in just a second, Bob? Okay, having a little technical difficulty there. Back to the amendment. So in order to even, like I say, have in place, you know, put in place reasonable restrictions, this is something that we have to do. Now, what you might not also know, and you're probably going to be surprised, you know, when people think of Tennessee, people think of Tennessee as a pro-life state, and it is. Most of the people in Tennessee are pro-life. And you would think that, okay, we're just going to put this amendment up in 2014, and it's going to pass, and it's a done deal. Well, that's not quite the case. Because number one, and I don't have the wording right in front of me, and I apologize for that, when people hear about constitutional amendments, they get a little nervous. And it's easily misread one way or the other. And so people are hesitant to change the Constitution. And some people have read the actual amendment. Some say, well, it's actually going to increase abortion. Others say, well, you know, it doesn't go far enough. Or they just don't understand it. Or worse yet, they don't even know about it. You know, if they don't know about a change to the Constitution and understand what that change is when they walk in that voting booth, they're not going to vote for it. It's not going to happen because they don't understand it, so they won't vote, or they'll vote no. So that's why it's going to be very important that we get the word out about this. The other thing that you might not know is even though we are a pro-life state since 2000, since this ruling, we've become pretty much an abortion destination in the South. All of the other pro-life states around us, whose laws are stricter, in those states, we've got a lot of their women coming over here and their young girls coming over here for abortions. So we have become one of the abortion designations in the South. And I think that's disgraceful, especially in a conservative pro-life state like Tennessee. Bob, if you're out there, you can call in at any time now. We're ready for you. Anyway, the Tennessee Action Council, if you go to the website, you can read about Amendment 1. You can read about Project 2014. We have not been in existence that long, and we've had one fundraiser, and we're going to have some more. I know our chairman, Bill Hembrick, is working hard on getting some outstanding guest speakers lined up to help raise money for this effort. Another organization that is working hard on this is Tennessee Eagle Forum with Bobby Petray and David Fowler, the Family Action Council of Tennessee. And, in fact, if you go on any of the three websites, you can read the actual amendment for yourself, and you can read the background on it. And folks, this has been a long time coming. I think they started this – well, it started right after the ruling. So people like David Fowler and Bobby Petray and others have put a lot of effort into this over the years, and we've got to do everything we can to get the word out about this amendment, why it's so important, so that when people go in there, they know what they're voting on and why they're voting for it. Because you can bet the other side will be out in force, and the other side has very deep pockets. And they will spare no cost. They will do everything they can to scare everybody and make them think, oh, well, you know, this is going to lead back to the old days of coat hangers in the alley, that kind of garbage. You know, the kind of stuff they throw out all the time. And, of course, they'll take the rare exceptions of rape and incest, and they'll make that sound like that's the majority of abortions. We know, of course, that's false. Bottom line is they will do a scare campaign, as they always do, and they're well-funded. And if people don't know or don't understand the issue, then they're not going to vote for it. Like I say, they'll leave it blank. And then what will happen is, if the amendment's defeated, because by the way, you have to have 50% plus one of the number of people that voted in the last gubernatorial election. All right, so just a simple majority is not good. It's got to be that number. And I'm not sure what that number is right off the top of my head. But very important amendment, important issue, and people have to get on board, and we have to do everything we can to educate the people about it. Okay. Let me get started. We've got a real quick liner break to take, and then we'll get back to the show. If you love conservative internet radio as much as we do, then you already know about the Grit and Grace radio show. Jennifer Meadows and Josh Bernstein have been carrying the conservative message on the net for years, and now they're on conservativenationmedia.com. Join Grit and Grace every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, for solid American patriotism, unapologetic commentary, the latest news and conservative analysis, with a good dose of plain old-fashioned fun. That's Grit and Grace every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. Hey, if you're listening out there, and you know, we're still waiting for our first guest. I think we've had some phone issues with them, so hopefully Rob will call in here in a few. But either way, if you have an opinion about this issue or you have a comment, love to hear from you. No crazies. I will cut you off in a heartbeat if you call up here with some crazy stuff, all right? So, once again, the Amendment 1 will be on the ballot in 2014. It neutralizes the Tennessee Constitution on the issue of abortion. And we need 50% plus one of the number of people who voted in the last gubernatorial election in order to pass this amendment. The Tennessee Action Council, as I mentioned, will be having some more fundraisers in the near future. Family Action Council of Tennessee will also be working on this. David Fowler's been working very hard. Bobby Petray's been working very hard. And if you have a concern for the unborn, you need to get on those sites. You need to understand this amendment. You need to be able to talk to people about it and why it's important and explain the process to them. I've got a caller here.
Hello?
Bob, is that you? Hello, Bob?
Yes, it is. I've been trying to call in for the last 15 minutes.
I know. Well, I think you popped up with a different number earlier, and I couldn't hear you, but I've got you now.
Okay.
So I did my I did my best to keep it going, so we're going to turn it over to you. And basically, just so you know, if you haven't heard, I've kind of given them a background on Amendment 1 and why we need to pass that. But what you're really going to talk about is you're going to talk about the issue of abortion. And your topic, what you wrote out, was basically life, God's design for the heart of his creation. So without any more babbling from my side, I'm going to let you take this over, okay?
All right. Listen, thanks a lot. First of all, I do want to thank Tennessee Action Council for allowing me to be able to do this. And, Dave, I just wanted to say that there are many arguments against abortion, but what I want to focus on is the main argument that I believe that all arguments must rest upon, and that is the biblical view of life, life from God's perspective as a creator and giver of life. And as we look at life being the design and the heart of God for his creation, there is a parallel concept, when you look at that, that goes side by side with life, and that is the concept of blessing. Where you see life in Scripture, you will see blessings attached to it. But we must also look at the opposite of life, which is death. And death was not God's design nor heart for his creation. He did not design his creation to propagate death. And just as blessings is a parallel concept that goes hand in hand with life, there is a parallel concept that goes hand in hand with death. And that is the concept of cursing, and also judgment comes along with that. Tonight I'd like to be able to look at life and blessing and death and cursing, with life being at the center of God's heart for his creation. This is a consistent theme throughout the Bible. So I believe that we as Christians, if we're going to give an argument for life, this is where it needs to begin. This is the basis of our argument. So let's begin briefly by looking at Genesis, at the Genesis account of the creation of life, to see God's heart for life. This is what we really need to see. During the creation week, God spoke, and life for the first time ever was brought forth. And God said, "Let the earth bring forth grass, the herb yielding seed, and the fruit tree after its kind." He also brought forth life in the oceans and the birds of the air and all living creatures in the field. There was an explosion of life, if you will, upon the earth in every living thing. But in Genesis 1:22, God said something of tremendous importance, and many people pass this by. And it says that God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply." So God gave his creation a command, and that command was to propagate or procreate their own kind. All living creatures are commanded to pass on the life that God gave them from one generation to another. That is God's design for his creation. He gave his creatures life, and they were designed to pass life on. But don't miss this. This is what that I found is very important. That God's command to propagate life was in the form of a blessing. The Bible says God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply." Now, Dave, the Hebrew word "bless" in this passage has tremendous meaning. It literally, literally means to kneel. But it also has the idea of adoration. If you can imagine in your mind's eye creation in submission to the creator and giver of life was kneeling in a sense before God and submitting to his design and purpose, which is propagating life from one generation to another. Creation was giving adoration or bringing glory to God by kneeling and submitting to him for the very purpose that they were designed. And that purpose is life, wasn't death. David says in Psalms 19 that the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. Even the inanimate objects of creation, the heavens itself, submit to God's design and bring him glory. He declares and shows the creative power of God's hand. The psalmist also says in Psalm 148, "Praise ye him, sun and moon, praise him, all you stars of light." Even the sun and moon and stars praise God. That was what they were designed to do. So in the beginning of creation, God gave life to his living creatures for the purpose of passing life on. And they kneeled and submitted to God's design and purpose for them. Now, when you look at that, the same blessed... I'm sorry, go ahead.
I wanted to ask you something. I've noticed this about a lot of, you know, a lot of different aspects of the environmental movement. If you read Genesis and then you read what the environmentalists say, one of their big deals is, oh, there's too many people. We've got to, you know, control our population. It's just unsustainable. That's what they normally say. But, you know, that's another one of those things that is in direct conflict with what Genesis says in a creation account. Now, you know, and I'm not a theologian. I'm a believer. I'm a Christian. I will never be mistaken for Billy Graham, okay? I'm under no illusions here, all right? But it just seems to me that a lot of people, especially these environmentalists, and some of them claim, you know, a lot of them are, unfortunately, the environmental movement has kind of seeped into the church, and a lot of people are buying into it. But you have to wonder how much they've read of the Bible, because if they read much of it at all, they would see that a lot of the concepts and principles that the environmentalists push are in direct conflict, especially, you know, starting with that one right there. So that's just something I thought I'd bring up.
No, you're correct. In 2 Peter, it says that God has given us all things that pertain unto life and godliness. Now, a lot of times when we think about life, we only think about the spiritual side of life. But God has given us everything that pertains to life. That is both physical and spiritual. Everything that we need, God has given to us and has provided for us. And the environmentalists, because everything that they do is antithetical to God and His Word, and so therefore they don't believe what God has to say. They don't believe that God has the ability to be able to provide for all of the creatures. All of the things that happen in the world, mainly, for instance, like hunger and things like that in some nations, it has nothing to do with the amount of food that is available or not available, or even the amount of land. It has to do with the government that is actually over that type of people, or the religion that dominates in that particular country, for instance, India. And so what you see there is all of these things that go against God in His creation are people who have accepted an ideology that is contrary to Scripture itself.
Yeah. But you look at God in the Bible, where God says He made man in His image, okay? And it's pretty clear in the Bible that we're like at the top of His creation, whereas the animals are a little lower. Well, if you listen to the environmentalists, we're all the same. Matter of fact, if you listen to the environmentalists, we are the scourge of all creation, which is directly counter also to the Bible.
Exactly. And so when you go through the creation account, you see that that God created everything, but when it came to Adam and Eve, He gave Adam and Eve something that was special, and He breathed life into them because man is totally separate than the rest of creation, because God made us in His image. Which, by the way, another concept with passing on life is the idea of passing on this the spiritual life of the image of God, and that's something that I would have to take up on another day. But that's what you're seeing here. Even with creation itself, creation is submitting to God for the design that God made it. And so the same thing that happened with Adam and Eve. In submission to the Creator and the giver of life, they were basically kneeling in a sense of that idea of what blessing means before God, and submitting to His design and purpose for their life, which is propagating life from one generation to another. There was nothing in there that God ever designed, whether it's within nature or whether it was within man, to propagate death within itself, okay? And so side by side with life, we see blessings and blessings from God. Now, when Adam and Eve sinned against God, death entered creation for the very first time. And this was not God's design for His creation. And death, as you know, is just simply defined as the word separation, which means that you're separated both physically and spiritually. So Adam and Eve, for the first time, they were now spiritually separated from God when they sinned. That is why they ran from God, Dave. They ran from God because they, when they heard Him coming to the garden, they could no longer stand in His presence, because for the first time, since God made them, they were full of shame, guilt, and sin. And the natural response of anyone, sin, is to run from God. Why? Because God is holy, pure, and righteous, and no one can stand in the presence of God with the filthiness of sin. And so along with that came the curse. God went ahead and cursed them. Which, by the way, in that, work is not a curse. It's just that when we work, we have to work harder. Okay? Now, if God would have left Adam and Eve in that state of death, they would have been separated from God forever. They would remain in the state of death, separated from God, but God revealed his heart even in that situation. So when Adam ran from God, what was God's response? To a man who would be eternally separated from him, God went to Adam. God killed an animal, took the skins and completely clothed them and covered them with the skins of that animal. Dave, this was the first picture that God gave to man about the coming of Jesus Christ and the sacrifice that he would make for man, the only sacrifice that would bring a person from death to life, from separation from God to total forgiveness. So from the beginning of time, God's heart for his creation is life. He was designed to propagate life physically, and now as a sinful creature who is spiritually dead, God provided life through an animal sacrifice as a picture of the coming of Jesus Christ, who is the way, the truth, and the life, and the only way to the Father. So whether it was before sin or after sin, God's heart for his creation had to do with life. And I was wondering if I know about we're running out of time, if I can go to into another aspect which had to do with the law.
Now we got about 3 minutes or so before I've got to take a break, and then we'll have a few minutes after the break. But just do a quick station identification here. This is Inside Tennessee. I'm Dave Vance, your host. We're talking to Bob Krieger about the biblical view of life from God's creation on. The phone number is 718-305-7176. Okay, Bob, we'll let you go to move on to the next point.
Okay, I want us to look at God's heart for his creation as expressed in the law. The law is very important, and we need to understand what the law is all about. And so Jesus said that the law of God hangs on two commandments: loving God and loving others. So the foundation of the law is love. The law is an expression of the righteousness and holiness of God, but it also expresses his heart toward his creation by limiting what they can and cannot do. And all actions toward God and others is to be based upon love. So God gave us the Ten Commandments. And people think that when Moses, went up on Sinai, that's all God did for 40 days, giving 10 commandments. But actually, the 10 commandments are a summary of the 613 or so commandments that God gave Moses at Sinai. So the 10 commandments is a summary of all the laws, and the other 600 or so commandments are case law, laws that show how to apply the rule of law in the 10 commandments. So God declares his command to all people in the Ten Commandments. He says, thou shalt not do murder. That's the literal translation of the sixth commandment. He forbids the taking of human life outside of self-defense and more. Now, the case law that I want us to look at concerning taking the life of an unborn child is found in 21, verses 22 through 25. And it says, if men strive and hurt a woman with a child, so that her fruit, her child, depart from her, and yet no mischief follow, he shall surely be punished according to the woman's husband will come upon him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. Now, the ESV says it this way: when men strive together and hit a pregnant woman so that her children come out, but there is no harm, the one who hit her shall surely be fined as the woman's husband shall impose on him and shall pay as the judges determine. So if a miscarriage takes place and no harm comes upon the child, then restitution is to be paid to the husband. And this is a law that we use today, like in car accidents, to pay medical bills, pain and suffering, etc. But verse 23 says this: but if mischief follows, then thou shalt give life for life. In other words, if the child dies, penalty that is handed down to the perpetrator is death. Life for life. Life for life in this passage is applied in the case of the woman dying or the child dying. Both woman and child.
Bob, I'm going to have to hold you up right there. We've got to take a hard break, and when we'll come back, we'll finish up with this point. You're listening up to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
This is Dave from the Dave Matthews Band for Rad. When you go out and party, get drunk, then drive, you're not only loaded, you're a loaded weapon. When you celebrate, designate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Happy anniversary, honey.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Wait, is that a goat?
Goats are a great gift, but maybe not for her. Go to goatsfortheoldgoat.com to give a goat and end hunger in South Sudan. So, do you like it? Goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. And we're talking to Bob Krieger. He is a member of the Tennessee Action Council. And Bob is talking about the issue of life from a biblical perspective. Bob, right before the break, you were making reference to a verse in Exodus, and you were talking about if two guys were in a fight and one of them bumped into a pregnant woman and caused her to, well, you said miscarry. I think if I understood correctly, if she had the child and the child was okay, then there would be some restitution. But if the child died, it was treated just as if they had killed the mother. Is that accurate?
Yeah, yeah. In verse 23, it says, and if mischief follow, or, you know, then thou shalt give life for life. In other words, if the child dies, or even the woman dies, that the penalty is handed down to the perpetrator is death. So it's life for life. So if there's a miscarriage, if a pregnant woman is hit and there's a miscarriage and there's no harm done to the woman or to the child, then there's only restitution that is paid, whatever pain and suffering like, you know, in our days today. But if there is death that was involved, to include the child, many people exclude the child in the womb, but when you look at that passage, it is specifically talking also about the child. And if the child dies too, then that the penalty of that particular death is that the person who caused it was to die also.
Okay. Bob, we got a couple of minutes left here before our next guest, so I just want to give you an opportunity to, make the points that we can make in the time we have left. And I hate that we couldn't pick you up earlier on, but we can definitely have you back on the show.
No, listen, that's no problem. What I would like for the people to look at and even study further is that. When God says that he hates the shedding of innocent blood in Proverbs chapter 6, that he judges nations for killing children, God actually judges nations for killing children. Matter of fact, the Promised Land, before the Israelites entered the Promised Land, one of the things that he told Israel, the reason why that they were going in to kill everybody in the land, was because they sacrificed their children to other gods. And he warned them, do not take up this practice. Do not learn their ways. Do not do these things. And so God specifically judged Canaan, and the Israelites went in and then took over. But God also warned Israel, if you do the same thing, I will judge you. So because they did not repent, as a matter of fact, they turned to other gods, began to sacrifice their children to these gods. And then God eventually had them taken over by another nation. They were scattered to the four winds of the earth. And so what I want us to see is that in the law itself, that God's heart toward life is so strong and so sacred that he will judge a nation and totally destroy a nation and scatter a nation just because they killed its children. And what I want us to think about, not only as Christians, but as Americans, is that, yes, we are an exceptional nation in our founding, but we cannot think that we are so exceptional that we cannot come under the judgment of God. As a matter of fact, Dave, I don't believe judgment is coming. I believe right now, as we are talking, that the United States of America is under the judgment of God. And if that judgment continues, we will be totally destroyed. But the only way that that judgment is going to, the hand of God is going to be stayed as far as judgment from him, is when this nation turns back to the God of the Bible, whose son is Jesus Christ, and repents and turns back to Jesus Christ. That is the only thing that's going to save us from that.
But, you know, and it's kind of arrogant for us to think that you can kill 50 million unborn and not have to pay a price. So, you know, we look at a lot of things in the Old Testament and people think, well, that was then. But, you know, God's the same God. And I don't know how many the Canaanites and others had killed, but I have a hard time believing it was 50 million. So I think we definitely need to be concerned and definitely repent on that issue. Well, Bob, I appreciate you coming on, and we'll have you back. Sorry for the technical issues there, but that happens. That's the nature of internet radio, and as you know, last week I had some internet issues. So, but anyhow, thanks for coming on, and we'll have you back. I appreciate you. Appreciate hearing from you.
Well, thank you so much, Dave. I appreciate being on the show.
All right. Take care. Have a good night.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay. Our next guest is Representative Sheila Butt. Representative, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Now,
Bob, who just spoke, is a good friend of mine. He's a constituent here in Murray County, one of my constituents, and just a very sincere and great man.
Well, yeah, he really, you know, he's got his heart into it, that's for sure, and you know, he means what he says, and he's, you know, he's telling it like it is.
He is.
Well, what do you see coming up in the session, the upcoming session, that you kind of maybe want to give some of us a little preview of? What do you intend to do legislatively, or what do you expect to see in the legislature in this next session in January?
Well, I do have several things coming up, and I do want to discuss that. But I had also thought that it might be a good idea for us to, just for a few minutes, look at the background of this SJR 127 and talk a
sure.
little bit about what happened in 1992. You know, Junior Davis of Maryville is what really started this, and this was a man who wanted to stop his ex-wife from giving away his frozen embryos. That's really what happened in 1992. She wanted to donate the embryos, and the court sided with Junior Davis, and in the ruling of David versus Davis, Tennessee's highest court concluded that there was a fundamental right to privacy in the Tennessee Constitution that included the right to procreational autonomy. So that has been the ruling that has been the basis for all these years of rejecting the efforts we have made in Tennessee to regulate abortion. So that was the very beginning, and then in 2000, a decision by the Tennessee Supreme Court wrongly ruled in Planned Parenthood of Middle Tennessee versus Sunquist that the Tennessee Constitution contains a fundamental right to abortion even broader than anything that's affirmed in the Roe v. Wade at the federal level. So
yep.
many of our common sense state laws that had been passed by the Tennessee legislature were immediately stripped away, including informed consent for women considering abortion, a 48-hour waiting period, hospitalization for second and third trimester abortions. You know, all that was just stripped away at once. So people may be wondering, why is it so important for us in Tennessee? And I wanted to give them that background so that they could see that you know, this is something we really need to do. Now, in 2011, the legislature did pass something that said, at the very least, that a doctor had to have privileges at a hospital within 1 hour of where the abortion was performed. This was the Life Defense Act. And we did finally get to pass that last year. As a result, there have been some clinics that have been forced to close because the doctors would come in here from other places and fly out an hour after doing an abortion. And that, talk about woman's health, that woman was left there with no options to go to a hospital or to see her doctor again. So we are in the state of Tennessee just trying, you know, when people come down here and they will to fight against SJR 127, they're going to be talking about women's health. They disguise the term abortion as women's health.
Right. Yeah, that's what you're hitting on a big point there, because you're right. They are going to come in. They're going to spend a lot of money. They have deep pockets. They're going to say women's health. They're going to use the most extreme cases, and they're going to basically tug at heartstrings. And if people don't understand the language of the amendment, they're not going to vote for it.
And it just is imperative for us to tug at heartstrings and to say that if you're really concerned about women's health, physically and emotionally, you know, years later, women that have had abortions are still trying to deal with that emotionally. So women's health opinion includes them not being able to get an abortion for something that years later they may regret physically, they may regret emotionally. You know, and I get tired of people who want to do the right thing being considered the people who aren't compassionate. Of course we're compassionate, but we are and hope to always be a culture of life. How very important that is.
Yeah, especially for the most innocent life, and that's you know, the unborn child is the most innocent and the one that can defend itself the least. I've got to take a real quick read break, and we will be right back. There comes a time when good things have to give way to great things. ConservativeNationMedia.com is growing like a Texas Longhorn, which is why Michael B. Smith now has his own show. Check out Soldier of Patriotism, Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central, on ConservativeNationMedia.com. But don't be worried. He's the same Michael B. you've come to know and love, and you'll hear even more great interviews and awesome conservative commentary from our very own main man, Michael B. Smith, on Soldiers of Patriotism, Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central, on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we are talking to Representative Sheila Butt. And Representative Butt, I'm going to turn it back over to you. We were talking about Amendment 1 and the importance of getting that passed.
Yes, and it is so important. I would really like to read the amendment right now, because you're going to have people say, oh, well, in Tennessee, you know, they're going to try to control everything about your health. They're going to try to control. Let me just read what the amendment says. Nothing in this Constitution secures or protects the right to abortion or requires the funding of an abortion. The people retain the right through their elected state representatives and state senators to enact, amend, or repeal statutes regarding abortion, including but not limited to circumstances of pregnancy resulting from rape or incest, or when necessary to save the life of the mother. Go ahead.
I want to interject something. That last little part there that you read is what a lot of people who are pro-life, they're on our side, but they hear that last little part and they think, well, you're trying to write abortion into the law, into the Constitution, and that's not the case.
Absolutely not. As a matter of fact, this must be passed. This is what will keep Tennessee from being the destination state for abortion, which it is right now. It is hard for us to understand that even though we are a red state, that we're the fifth highest provider for abortion to non-residents in the entire United States. So this is something that will keep people, other states, and as you mentioned earlier, I was listening to the program, and you mentioned that other states are passing legislation that restricts abortion. And so that is even making more people come to the state of Tennessee. So this yep. is something that we must pass. And then you know what happens? Then the people of the state of Tennessee get to have the right to say what they want to do for abortion through their elected yep. officials. That's all this is doing, is giving the people of the state of Tennessee a vehicle to say what they how they want to manage abortion in the state of Tennessee.
Rather than the state Supreme Court. And that's, you know, it power back to the people through their representatives, not the Supreme Court of Tennessee, which, you know, they face no repercussions. Nobody is going to vote them out of office. They have to do, you know, on rare cases, can you impeach somebody? So even regardless of how you feel about the issue, you should not be happy that judges decided this. You should at least want the representatives to have a voice in this. So that's what it does. And we have to keep in mind, too, until Roe v. Wade is overturned, there's always going to be some in our state until we
yes.
can overturn that.
Yes. Now, one thing that your legislature right now has done is tried to keep every bit of state funding possible away from Planned Parenthood. As a matter of fact, I Googled abortion today and thinking about this tonight, and most of the sites that come out first are Planned Parenthood, which I think is so ironic that it's Planned Parenthood, because it's really not a lot about parenthood at all. But at any rate, you know, we have decided in the state of Tennessee that taxpayers do not have to fund abortion through Planned
Good.
Parenthood. And that's something that's just happened in the past 2 or 3 years, and been a really good thing for our state. Now, I did want to mention that Judicial made that decision. There was one dissenting justice. It was Justice Mickey Barker, and he wrote, rather than leaving policy decisions regarding reasonable abortion regulation to the General Assembly, this court has converted itself into a roving constitutional convention. So he said this court just took it all upon itself and took the decision out of the hands of the people of the state of Tennessee. So that's what this amendment is trying to do. And this has been a lengthy process to even get this amendment on the ballot. So
oh,
it's,
yeah,
taken
it's taken
a long
years.
Time to do this. Yes. And I visit a nursing home. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say I visit nursing homes a lot. And your elderly are beginning to ask the same question, that if we are aborting babies for convenience, when will their time come? They're asking me, Sheila, how long will we get to live here? How long will we get to live? Because if we're not a culture of life from the womb to the grave, then what difference does it make? And they're beginning to feel that, because we have raised a generation of young people who have been taught evolution. And if you're just a, you know, an animal on the higher rung of the ladder, what difference does it make?
Exactly.
And being a culture of life is what separate humanity, you know, from the animal world. So there's just so many things for all of us to consider and to make
yep.
sure that, is it going to cost money, David? It's going to cost money. Is it going to cost time? It's going to cost time. It's going to cost us to see that this gets passed. But if it doesn't, then we're saying to the world that Tennessee is no longer a culture of life.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm going to have to take a quick break. We will be right back. Don't go away. You're listening to Inside Tennessee.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
So, I'm a dog, and I just got adopted by this new human guy, and I'm starting to wonder how he got along without me. I mean, okay, something as simple as walking around the block. He's got this leash thing, and he puts me on one end and him on the other, and I'm just taking him around. I think he's afraid of getting lost. Without that leash and me guiding him along, I don't think he'd find his way back home. But it's kind of cute.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Hey, sweetie. What's going on?
Well, honey, I have some news.
Okay, what?
All that training paid off. I got the job.
Oh, I knew you would get it. So when do you start?
When you donate stuff to Goodwill, you help provide job training for people right here in your community. Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking with Representative Sheila Butt, and we're talking about Amendment 1 in Tennessee, which will be on the ballot in 2014. Right before the break, you were talking, Representative Butt, about some of the people in the old folks' homes, I'll call it, that they're concerned because, you know, if we're so callous about the most innocent life, and if we don't have a culture of life and don't value, then, you know, what is justification for keeping them around? That's probably what they're thinking. They're just wondering. You know, I'm sure they've heard about the death panels in Obamacare. Sure. And so they naturally they're wondering.
Right. And this is not something that I've brought up to them. This is something that they have brought up to me and said, you know, we're beginning to see that if we can, you know, just destroy life or not let it come into the world for convenience, why would they keep us around? So I understand that, and we all need to understand that either we are going to prize life and be a culture of life, or we're not. And it's very important, and I know that the majority of the people in Tennessee feel that way, but they have to feel it enough next year. You know, anything worth doing is going to cost you something. It's going to cost you some money. It's going to cost you time. We're going to have boots on the ground because, as you've mentioned, they have deep pockets. They will come here saying that we're trying to strip away women's health, and we need for people to be educated and informed and talk to their neighbors and every single person that they can talk to. It's just extremely important.
I've got to ask you, how exactly did you answer them when they asked you that question?
I said, not if I can help it, because I believe in a culture of life, and we talk a lot about that. And I say, you are very blessed to live in Tennessee because Tennessee, the people of the state of Tennessee, believe in that kind of a culture. So, you know, that's one good thing about Tennessee that we can, when we had our marriage amendment, over 80% of the people in the state of Tennessee voted for marriage being between a man and a woman. That's one of the great things about our state, that we do have traditional values. There is nothing wrong with having traditional values. There's nothing wrong with understanding what the Bible teaches and living that. And the majority of the people of Tennessee understand that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, and we do have some, you know, you're one of the good guys or good girls, as it were, but unfortunately, I don't have a lot of faith in a lot of our elected officials at the state level. I'm very concerned about Medicaid expansion. I'm hoping that it does not happen, but is there anything in the Medicaid expansion? How is that going to impact? Is that going to require funding of abortion in the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare? Do you know?
I'm sure it would. I'm absolutely sure it would. And here's something, David, that I do not understand. I do not understand why the Southern Baptist Association have not stood up to the Obamacare through the courts and said the Muslims are exempt, the unions are about to be exempt. All of these other organizations and many organizations are exempt because for religious reasons. Why does not the Southern Baptist Association as a whole stand up and say, we want to be exempt for religious reasons? Why doesn't the Methodist Church stand up and say, hey, we want to be everybody else is exempt for religious reasons? So I don't understand why we have not stood up and said that we want to be exempt because of religious belief.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good question. And
I think the churches have been way too silent on this.
Oh, yeah. Well, as a Southern Baptist, I'm leery of where we're heading. I don't see us taking the stands that you would think that a Southern Baptist would. Hopefully that'll change. I know
the Mennonites are exempt. You know, the Mennonites are exempt. The Amish are exempt.
What section? Do you know what section right off the top of your head that these exemptions are under? Do you happen to know in Obamacare what sections are in?
I don't, but they would be easy to find.
Yeah.
They would be.
Yeah.
I know the Amish are exempt. I know the Mennonites are exempt. You know, why hasn't the Catholic Church stood up and said, we want to be exempt for religious reasons? I don't understand how these organizations of believers have been quiet. And I hope it's not because we're afraid of losing some kind of nonprofit status. It's not worth that.
I personally, and I brought this up to my pastor, and I've mentioned this, I think we should have a 501c3 burning. I think all of the churches should just burn it. Have a ceremony, burn it, and say what needs to be said on every topic that people need to hear about.
You know, I have asked ministers, why don't they preach about slothfulness? If we really believed that laziness was wrong, and that is, maybe we'd have more people wanting to go to work. You know, you don't have to preach political issues. You just need to preach what the Bible teaches.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's what gets me about the so-called people who are, they call themselves fiscal conservatives, and they don't want to get involved in all the social stuff. Well, guess what? All of our fiscal problems come from social ills. You mentioned work. Well, you know, why do we have such a big welfare system? Because we got all these people who have no pride, have no work ethic. Well, that's a moral issue, but it's costing
us.
There's nothing out there that costs money that there's not some moral issue behind it.
That's exactly right. And when your budget is full of problems with morality, that's exactly what's in our budget, a great deal of it. And we spend a great deal of time discussing that and how people can separate that. It may be convenient, but it's not right.
We've got a few minutes left, and is there any specific legislation? Obviously, we've got to get Amendment 1 passed. I think we all agree with that, and that's something we all go to work on. Is there any other legislation in the last couple of minutes we have here that you want to talk about that you either have heard about or that you can maybe consider sponsoring?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I am looking at several types of legislation to help us stand up for the citizens of the state of Tennessee from this overreach of the federal government. It is just something that every single one of us in the legislature, I hope we understand that we are put in a position. I really did not go there to be an administrator for the federal government. I don't really think that's what our position is. And many times I would try to pass a bill last year, and then they would come to me from the Department of Human Services and say, oh, Sheila, we can't do this because, for instance, Carrie Lynn Weaver tried to pass a bill that you could not buy cigarettes with your EBT card. I mean, doesn't that just make sense?
Yeah.
But then the department came to her and said, well, federal law says that you can. And if the federal law says that you can, we can't undo that. So there is a huge disconnect between what the federal government is doing and what the state wants to do. And, of course, Judd will be talking to you tonight about the bilateral Congress session. And, you know, maybe that's a time we can sit down and say to our senators, we don't want to give cigarettes on our EBT cards in Tennessee. We need you to help us do that. We need to not have to do that. And if they don't, I think we have to pass legislation. Louis Johnson has some very interesting legislation. I don't know if you've heard about it, the State Interposition Act. And it's something I'm looking at very closely.
That's definitely needed. That is definitely needed. Can you now? And we talked about this not too long ago, and interposition might be something a lot of people aren't familiar with. So if you could elaborate on that a little bit.
Well, interposition, it just means that our state legislator is going to interpose between the federal government and the citizens of the state of Tennessee and say, we're not going to do this. Our state is not going to do that. It is already happening. For instance, the marijuana laws in Colorado. You know, the state has already said we're not doing that, and nobody's doing anything about it. Chief Justice Roberts, when he opined on the health care act, here's what he said. State prerogatives can be adopted by the simple expedient of not yielding to federal blandishments whenever we do not want to embrace the federal policies. As states are separate and independent sovereigns, sometimes states have to act like it. Now, that's what Justice Roberts
said. If you want the 10th Amendment to mean something, you got to stand up for it. Representative Butt, I appreciate you coming on. I wish I had more time. And matter of fact, if I could get you to come back on, I'd like to have you for a whole lot longer. So we will try to, you know, I'll get with you and see if we can't do that in the near future. And I definitely hope you take up that interposition bill. That's something that our state needs.
Yes, it is. And I'm looking very closely at it, and we'll if I decide to do that, we'll need to garner support across the state and be calling our legislators and saying, yes, this is what we need to do in the state of Tennessee. So I'll need your help with that if that comes about.
I'll do all I can. Hey, thanks again for being with us, and we'll talk to you later. Take care.
Thank you so much. Good night.
Thank you. Good night. Don't go away. We'll be right back after the break with Representative Judd Matheny. Stand by.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on the very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it. That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we have Representative Judd Matheny on the line with us. How you doing tonight, Representative Matheny?
I'm doing great, Dave. Just listened before the break to one of my heroes, Sheila Butt, and so glad I'm on her side. She's a terrific lady.
She's a good one. We need more like her, more like you. Hey, appreciate you being with us, and we've already done we've had the first Joint Legislative Advisory Committee. I think I got the name right this time. That was back in August.
It's Oversight Committee, very close, Joint Legislative Oversight.
Okay. And the topic of the last one was the refugee resettlement, basically through a Tenth Amendment perspective of, hey, this is a federal program, but we're shelling out state dollars for it. So the program itself is irrelevant whether it's good, bad, or ugly, but it's the fact that it's a federal program that's costing us. Now, November 12th is the next meeting, and there's going to be a follow-up, and of course there will be some other issues. So that's kind of where we're at, and I'll just turn it over to you and let you take it from there.
Very good. Thanks, Dave. And we hope folks will try to come and be at the meeting at the state. It's on the complex of the state capitol there in the War Memorial Building, and it should be in room 16, which is the large House hearing room, and it will start at 9 o'clock in the morning on November the 12th, and that's Central Standard Time. And if you can't make it to the event the actual day, then it's also simulcast on the Internet on the Tennessee House of Representatives website under their video link, so go there and watch us. And you're right, Dave, what we did primarily last meeting, which was August 21st, is we basically introduced ourselves to the citizens of the state and tried to answer a couple of questions that they have had on some pretty chronic issues that have been looked at by some state legislators, but it's been hard to get some answers. And one of those was refugee resettlement. And we are not talking about the merits of the program, you're correct, but we are talking about the relationship between the state of Tennessee and the federal government. And what we discovered in those hearings is that in 1980, the federal government created a program under the United Nations, basically an umbrella of their refugee resettlement program. And at the time, the federal government, I think, bore at least more than 50% of the cost of permanently resettling a refugee, or at least for a long period of time, until their native home maybe becomes politically suitable again for them. But that the federal government would give, at that time, back in 1980, Dave, 36 months of assistance per refugee brought in. And at that time also, the United States of America was lower on the list of the of the nations that brought in refugees. Since that time, let's fast forward to something very relevant. In 2008, the program had degraded to the point that the federal government was only providing about 8 months of service to any single immigrant, and that was after, for the most part, they had to apply for and be denied state services, which, as you know, it's not very difficult to get an Arkin Care program for someone of a true refugee status in most cases. So we did discover that we think there's a large number of the refugees coming straight into the state and being directly assigned to our 10 care program, and we're working to put a cost on that, and I'll tell you in a minute just what we're working on to get that figure, exactly who we're working with. And, of course, the other thing we wanted to look at was the impact on our city schools, on our English language learner programs. What was the cost going to be on some other social services, such as temporary assistance for needy families, also known as TANF? And normally these costs wouldn't be a surprise to anyone, or there would always be someone in the General Assembly that would have a handle on them, because there would be costs that had been approved by the citizens of the state of Tennessee. But what we've discovered is since 2008, when the Bredesen administration, Governor Phil Bredesen's administration, gave up our co-authority with the federal government, our co-planning with the federal government on how many refugees would come into Tennessee and where they would go and what the cost would be. When we exited the program, it was given out to federal contract to be bid, and Catholic Charities has received the lion's share of the refugee resettlement into Tennessee and many other parts of the country. And so now we are just looking at the relationship between a federal contractor committing the state of Tennessee to taxpayer resources without the consent of the taxpayer, the direct consent of the taxpayer on a particular issue and expenditure of those monies. So that's what I intend to come up with is the answer to those questions, and we should have most of them for presentation at the next meeting on November 12th. The Tennessee House Office of Fiscal Review and Senate, actually, because this is both levels of the legislature involved. We should have a full report on the cost implications, both good and bad, of the refugee resettlement program in Tennessee. And I'm sure that will have some questions generated with it, and the fiscal review folks will be there to answer those, as well as some department heads. So that's how we will actually look at that issue again, and in the lens in which we're being very specific in looking at the issue.
It's been roughly 90 days since the first meeting. Do you think you expect them to present you a pretty good picture? You think they've had enough time to collect
absolutely.
All the relevant
information?
I've
seen them, yes, and we actually tried to make sure they had plenty of time. It's a very astute department, and I've seen them come up with huge amounts of research in 24 hours. So this was actually a project well within their purview, and we have a very capable research analyst that's heading it up. And as far as I know, she's been very forthcoming with asking all sides of the issue various questions and sending out some questionnaires, or at least emailing some questions out. And I know I've received several. And so I think we're going to get a comprehensive view of what we're looking at. And then once we have those numbers, we're not saying, oh, my gosh, it's going to be an all-out war against the program. That's not it at all. The point is, okay, this committee's done its due diligence. We've determined that there's taxpayer money being spent without the consent of the taxpayer on a federal program that is put here in the state of Tennessee with no input from elected officials in Tennessee. And we
and no oversight.
Control. Yes, well, and we want to, absolutely. And we want to get control of it. And who knows how it will end up, or what individual, whether a private contractor or state agency, could end up with the program. I do know there are, you know, millions of dollars of profit generated for nonprofits in the state of Tennessee on the refugee resettlement program, yet it's draining what I think is going to be probably millions from the taxpayer every year to pay for the program. It's really a double negative when you look at what the mission statement of a charity should be in order to get out into the everyday lives of the community, and also on the control that Tennessee citizens expect to have over their government and fiscal matters. So I'm looking forward to a good conclusion and coming up with a good compromise for everybody concerned and involved, and then, of course, moving on to another issue. And those other issues, by the way, that we're looking at, and you just let me know when we have to break or something, Dave.
We got a couple minutes, and I'll have to take one, but we're good for right now.
Okay. I'll try to frame this real quick. What we're going to look at on November 12th, what we hope to look at, is once again revisit the fiscal aspect and hopefully have some hard numbers of the refugee resettlement program in Tennessee. We also, I'm leaning hard towards, and the agenda will be produced very soon, but I'm leaning hard towards an unbiased conversation about the about a potential constitutional convention. And what I'd like to do, I don't know how the format's going to be, whether we'll have one group in favor of it and one group against it, or perhaps we may have one very articulate individual that can give a pragmatic discussion about the entire event, proposed
right.
event, that has a lot of credibility in the subject field. So I'm looking at both of those. And but I think it'll be a pretty good hearing, and or not hearing, but presentation, with questions asked by the legislators there. And if anybody would like to have a question asked of the panelists, you know, just write it down on a piece of paper, and there's a guy called the Sergeant at Arms. If you're looking at the legislative panel and you're live in the rooms, what I'm saying, there's a guy that usually sits on the extreme left or the extreme right, sometimes both, known as the Sergeant of Arms. He has a gold badge on. Just write down your question for which person and what your question is, in as much detail as you can, and give it to that gentleman, and he'll bring it to the respective senator or representative, and we'll try to get that question answered best of our ability while we have experts in the room. And that's on any subject, by the way, not just on, you know, a potential constitutional convention, which, like I said, I want to look at both sides of it. Both sides have merit, and both have some extraordinary potential pitfalls.
Yeah, there's a lot of good, bad, and ugly with that one. I've got to take a real quick read here, and then we'll be right back to you.
Okay.
Any police officer will tell you that Friday nights on the beat can get fairly hectic, and now Friday nights at conservativenationmedia.com will be even more interesting. We're proud to welcome retired police officer Kathy Henners to Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, with daily roll call. Kathy served her community in New York State for years, and now she serves America by keeping a watchful eye on the Muslim Brotherhood and any other troublemakers unlucky enough to cross her path. So don't miss Daily Roll Call with Kathy Henners, Fridays at 8 Eastern, 7 Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. We're talking to Representative Judd Matheny about the Legislative Oversight Committee, and you mentioned the Constitutional Convention. Now, so nobody gets the wrong idea, you're not pushing one way or the other. You're just, we're going to have the debate, and that's the purpose of this, correct?
Yes, there's a lot of question about it, and I just want to present an opportunity to look at it basically from 30,000 feet in this conversation. What are the large pros and cons? What are the historical attempts and their outcomes? What are in somebody's potential professional and expert opinion, what are some of the extraordinary benefits that could be seen by it? What are some of the extraordinary pitfalls that present themselves and is it, and Dave, I've heard you say this oftentimes, a prudent man has to look at the whole situation sometimes and say, is it not much easier to fight for the one we have rather than to fight for something we don't have in this environment, where we know that the liberal political machine out there will violate laws, they'll violate rules, they will use all kinds of subterfuge, they will clearly and gladly and repeatedly and overtly lie to the American public, and just shamefully so. And this is something that our citizens can do to help remedy those frustrations out there.
Yeah. And the lawless won't listen. They won't follow the law no matter how many you make. But, you know, here's the thing. Whatever comes out of that, I think it's a good debate to have, because if nothing else, it gets the public engaged and they start thinking about that and whether they come to the conclusion that, hey, you know, it's not worth the risk and they're not following this, or whether they say, hey, we need to do something different. Having
that's right, and,
the public
and
involved
it's nice
is huge.
And it's nice to be able to use, you know, what I hope to be Tennessee professionals and Tennessee legislators to talk about the ramifications from a Tennessee-specific standpoint. And this is a good way to crack that open and get some core questions answered and probably, frankly, get as many asked, if not 10 times more, which is a healthy thing also.
I've got to take another quick break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the bilateral session of Congress, unless you have something else you want to hit on the committee.
No, closely related to what we just spoke about, so it would be perfect.
All right, great. Hey, don't go away. We'll be right back after this short message.
$80 million voters can pull the wrong lever, and it's still the wrong lever.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today, with an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria. And thank you for your service.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking to Representative Judd Matheny. And Judd, before the break, we were talking about the advisory committee on 12th of November. Everybody needs to be there, room 16, 9 o'clock at 12th of November. And now we're going to talk about the bilateral session of Congress. Exactly what is that?
Okay, and before we jump into that, I didn't have a chance. We jumped in so fast on the last segment. Just to thank you for having Kathy Henners on the air, and I want folks to know that I spent about 10 years as a police officer here in Tennessee, and a lot of that as an investigator, as did she. And she is so impressive in her detail and her documentation. She says and presents nothing unless it has been reliably sourced, and folks can learn a lot from Kathy Henners. I encourage them to participate in that show in any way. Now, thank you for that, and let's jump into the bilateral session real quick. As I studied more and more into the Constitutional Convention, and I'm not the genesis of the idea, it has not totally come from me. 3 years ago, a then state rep who is a state senator now named Frank Nicely from East Tennessee introduced a bill that would have created a select oversight committee that met with our federal legislators. However, it didn't even make it out of a House subcommittee. And so I wanted to come up with something that would have the same effect for the legislature, but also the general public, and also for our federal legislators. And that was an opportunity for us all to get together one time a year and call it a bilateral session of Congress, and the entire House of Representatives and our 9 U.S. representatives and our 2 U.S. senators also join. and we have this bilateral session, and we're talking about political issues that are relevant to the political needs of Tennessee of the day. Ideally, we have it every January prior to going into the legislative session, so we're able to sort of make the mindset very current between not only state legislators but also our federal guys and gals, so they know more clearly what needs to be done in Washington in order to enable us down here. Also at this meeting, we would like to probably present our federal legislators with a to-do list, some short-term, some long-term.
A not-to-do list
will also be presented, maybe in a different way, though, but it will be. But the intent is not to bring them down and be scornful of anything or to hold an inquisition about any past position on any past political issue. It is meant for our 9 reps who represent the state as a whole and our 2 U.S. senators who each represent the state as a whole in the at-large status can be in one place at one time with basically their assistant managers in government. If you want to look at how a commercial platform would look at this, we are not only in charge of our cartilage here in Tennessee, all 99 House members, but we're also in charge of budgets. We're in charge of helping be of upholding the U.S. and the Tennessee Constitution, which say that we will protect our citizens' liberties and we will protect our state's sovereign rights. And so just making sure that everybody knows that we're concerned about those things and giving them a to-do list of things that they can do to help us preserve our state's rights. And let me give you a couple examples. One would be, how about you go up there and you put a balanced budget in place so we can have some predictability on the federal funding that we're going to get every year for our programs? Because remember, 40% of our state budget is federal money. And in some areas, at least 20% of additional money has federal strings attached to it or drawdown funds for other federal monies. So we need to be directly involved in 60% of our budget at every level, not just where we are working right here, but it's also where we're sending all our money and how we're expecting it to be spent and whether or not we're going to be able to have with predictability. And any state agency, any nonprofit will back me up on this, Dave, that if we don't have some predictability in a budget, then their budgets can never be have any predictability to them either. They will constantly have to
adjust.
Pay people less than they deserve. Yes, they'll constantly adjust. Yep. They'll constantly have to start and stop up programs. So the federal government's provided us with already with 5 years of inconsistency in any budget predictions. And the state has been the best firewall, if at all possible. But all of us know, and we've either been a part of the cutbacks and the trimmings that are in many times unnecessary compared to the actual cuts are not nearly as necessary as the damage it does to individual communities. And
right.
We just need to be able to plan better. We need to work on shrinking the size of government and sending more and more of our charity work into the private sector where it's always done the most efficiently. But these are the things we want to talk to the state about, or the federal government about. We also, just like we just recently had the closure of the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, well, I'd like to see a bill filed and passed that any state, if they so choose in advance, to have first right of refusal to operate any federal facility in whole or in part should the federal government choose not to or cannot. And we should automatically have that right. We should be able to open the Natchez Trace. We should be able to open the Smoky Mountains. We should be able to open some federal waterways. And we should never be hindered by that again.
Oh, I agree 100%. And that's, like you say, that definitely goes back to the sovereignty issue. As I understand it, East Tennessee, some of the school districts there had to route around. They had to take an alternate route that was, through back roads, narrow back roads, just to get the kids to school. It was ridiculous.
It was totally ridiculous. I mean, we could go into so many examples, but the folks listening to this show, they know some of the ludicrous closings that took place. But the bilateral session will be as simple as a meeting between the House of Representatives in the state of Tennessee and the House and the Senate members in Washington. Now, there's a possibility, it's up to the state Senate, that they may join us at a later date, so we hope they will.
Now, you've already sent out requests to all seven reps and both of our senators, correct?
Well, I have not sent out official request. I sent out sort of an icebreaker email to all of them, and I have spoken personally or had one of the folks working closely with me on this spoken personally to probably everyone, for sure. So they have been, and plus many of the U.S. reps and I believe both senators had individuals from their staff, or they said they would have individuals in their staff, from their staff in our meeting on August 21st when the committee, the Joint Legislative Oversight Committee that was also talking about refugee resettlement, that when we brought up and talked about this bilateral session, we did get a unanimous vote from the committee
right.
to pursue this. So I know that based on my conversations with those offices, they had people in the audience. So it's trickled down quite a bit. And, of course, I've heard some feedback from many of them. I've asked several personally. Senator Steve Cohen was very enthusiastic about participating and just encouraged me to make sure that the scheduling was done well, and that's one thing we're not taking lightly at all. And Congressman Rowe personally told me that he would be flattered to and would always accept any invitation from any member of the legislature to speak. And that's the kind of attitude that we're proud to have. And I know Congressman Diane Blacks has committed to come in once again as long as the schedule permits, and we're working on that now. I know Congressman Duncan has been advised of it. I know that Scott DeJarlais has told me personally that he will participate, and gladly so. He thinks this is a perfect exercise. I've not heard back from Senator Alexander yet or Senator Corker, but I know they've received word and that they're looking at it. But I know they've not shut this proposal down.
They haven't said
Yeah, they have not.
The
proposal that we passed in the House in a caucus meeting, not in a session, in a caucus meeting, they have received that information of the event and the breakdown of what the event will entail. So I hope they'll say yes pretty quickly.
So what can the public do? Just call our U.S. reps, call our state reps and senators?
Several things, and consistently talk about this to your friends and neighbors. Now, you know, we talked about a constitutional convention earlier in your show, and a next pragmatic step from where we are now to a constitutional convention, not saying the only step, but a next pragmatic one, I think, is this bilateral session, which is Tennessee taking the initiative, showing other states it's possible, even if there are naysayers of the same political party that are concerned about the view it might have amongst the citizenry. I cannot, and I know in my heart that it can't be bad to get us all together and talk about common issues. And anybody knows that if you talk to somebody, it leads to more productivity, it leads to better communication. It's not a bad thing. And we are very intertwined with our federal legislature, whether we want to admit it or not. Now,
yeah.
If we truly had a firewall that was nearly bulletproof with the 10th Amendment, then maybe there would never be a reason to. But because that line has been so blurred and so warped with precedents by liberal administrations, liberal courts, then now we have to say, look, you've decided to come into our living rooms, therefore you're going to sit down at a family meeting. And that's just the way
yep.
it is. And we are going to make it happen, and it's going to be a dignified event. It is going to be as regal an event as the state of Tennessee could put on. And it is going to be a very important event and a turning point, I hope, the beginning of a turning point of instilling more public confidence into politics.
Yeah.
This type of meeting has never been done in Tennessee, and that's definitely not the reason to do it. But just the fact that we've never sat down, the two levels of government, all the members in an official public meeting, to me, says that we've missed a good opportunity for a while.
Yeah, well, we definitely need to do it, and I appreciate your push on this. And everybody out there listening, you do need to call your state rep, your state senator.
That's right.
Call Senator Alexander Corker and say, hey, we want
talk
this thing to happen.
Groups and talk about it at your groups and organizations. And, by the way, I'm in the process of a good friend of mine is the district governor of the Rotary group here, or actually many counties. And I was a Rotarian for about 20 years before I got way too busy in Nashville on a lot of things. But I'm going to start a tour at a lot of Rotary clubs to start talking about this in the most apolitical of way. And if anybody knows anybody that has an opportunity, I would love to come visit. And what I just want to talk about are the semantics of a bilateral session, what its intended consequences are, and get feedback from individuals about other things that can be added to the program to make it truly successful. And we're not going to talk about Democrats or Republicans or violate the bylaws of very, very distinguished organizations like Rotary. But we are going to have a common-sense political talk about the time that we're in right now.
Well, unfortunately, our time is up, and I've really enjoyed it, and I appreciate you coming on, and we'll get you back. Matter of fact, I think we're going to have you on monthly. I don't think we've set the date yet, but as I recall, you've agreed to be with us once a month. So thank you for what
you do. Count me in. Thank you
And I appreciate you, and we will talk to you again soon. Have a good night. Thanks for coming on.
You too. Thank you.
All right. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Kathy Henners right after the break.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to stand for America now.
Happy anniversary, honey.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Wait, is that a goat?
Goats are a great gift, but maybe not for her. Go to goatsfortheoldgoat.com to give a goat and end hunger in South Sudan. So, do you like it? Goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Phone number is 718-305-7176. Let's assume that if you're listening to conservativenationmedia.com, you're a conservative. Safe assumption. You love America just like we do, and you don't want to get caught short in case the leftist government drops the ball and leaves the country and your family unable to get the basics of life in an emergency. Since that's the case, you're going to want a supply depot to get everything from patriotic gear to survival necessities to outfit and protect you and your family. And your pipeline to those essentials is right here at conservativenationmedia.com. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That will take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative and emergency survival needs, Wave your flag and be ready for whatever the future holds starting right now. Just go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution where America always wins. And our next guest is Kathy Henners. How are you tonight, Kathy?
I'm good, and how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Glad to have you back. And, you know, I told you I had the little CRS problem earlier, but guess what? I remembered.
I'm glad to hear that, and I'm happy.
Your show, Daily Roll Call, if you like the blog, if the listeners like the blog, Daily Roll Call, now you're going to get to hear her every Friday right here on Conservative Nation Media. And your show is what, 7 Central?
7 Central to 9 Central, yes. Yep.
7 Central.
And
nine
I just want to thank Representative Matheny for, you know, for giving me such a good recommendation. And we both share that law enforcement background, obviously. And I'm looking forward to it. I think that, you know, it's kind of come full circle, if you will. And, you know, we're still going to be doing a lot of different things, but the focus will be on the show, putting out the agenda of the Muslim Brotherhood. And that's what, you know, we've been talking about. And I'm excited. I'm really looking forward for this opportunity. And I thank you for plugging the show as well.
Well, hey, glad to do it. I think it'll be great. I know it'll be great. And I'm glad to have you. And I appreciate, I think if I go looking through, I've probably had you on more than anybody else. So just because you got your own show, don't think you're going to skate out on Mondays, all right?
I'm an air hog. Whatever it takes to get the word out, right?
I got you. I got you. So last week we talked about the explanatory memorandum of the Muslim Brotherhood. And we were on, and matter of fact, I sent the link out from your website to the memorandum. And it's page 6 of 18 of the English version, by the way. Neither one of us read Arabic. So if you got the link out there, and if you're tuned to this, then that's where she's going to take up from, unless you have somewhere else you were going to start tonight.
No, page 6. And I think last week we spoke of the different stages for the what they call the Islamic conquest. And when you look at the stages, and that'll be available later on this evening, I decided that's probably appropriate to put on a website as well so people can compare what they're saying in the manifesto to actually what the stages are and where they say they are. So, again, it's difficult reading, not just the Arabic part, but the English part because of their method of writing. I mean, you can look and tell that, you know, they're not really proficient in English and their language is not complete yet. But you can get the general gist of it. But someone has suggested to me that, you know, what does all of this mean? And maybe you should tell people what it means. And so this document, which has evidentiary value, which is huge, it was a treasure trove for law enforcement and for any intelligence people to read this document that they say this is what their plans are for North America. And so it was found in a raid and then used in this country's largest terrorism financing trial, which was called the Holy Foundation trial, the Holy Land Foundation trial, which was down in Dallas, Texas in 2008. So, and out of that came all kinds of convictions, as well as a series of unindicted co-conspirators who are still hanging around, and a lot of them now have landed in Tennessee. So this document is so important because as you go through it, they're telling you how and why and where they're going to implement their plan. And, of course, the plan is for the global caliphate, for the return of Islam in its purest form, and that everyone in the world, the entire world, is a member of Islam. It's a big, hefty goal. But you know what? They're doing pretty good. This memo was drafted in 1987 and eventually written in this form in 1991. So it's been around for a while. But you know, you have to look at them like they have been planning to change a complete society for all of these years, and they are right on schedule, which I find very frightening and very alarming. So where we left off last week was page 6, and under number 3, it says, understanding the historical stages in which the Islamic Ikhwan, which means brotherhood, activism went through in this country. And basically what that is saying is that the movement that we know of goes back most likely to about 1963 with the founding of the Muslim Student Association. That is their second largest organization in this country. And for those of you that have kids in college, be mindful, because just about every university college and now community college has a chapter of the Muslim Student Association. And what's really troubling is we've learned that the Metro Nashville School, Martin Luther King Magnet School in particular, has started a Muslim Student Association as an extracurricular activity after school. So colleges are no longer the place for the Muslim Student Association. They are now going into high schools, which is really the platform for the future for them. You know, the youth is such a big, important thing. So, you know, for those that are saying, there's not Muslim Brotherhood here, well, go to Martin Luther King Magnet School, and you'll see the MSA on their extracurricular activities. So, yeah.
Or the Murfreesboro Mosque, where they just invited one of the major players in MB. I'm sure you're tracking that one.
Oh, yes, Jamal Badawadi or whatever his name is. I can't pronounce Badawai or whatever. But, yeah, he is truly the Muslim Brotherhood through and through. He belongs to the Islamic Center of North America. And we know that the Murfreesboro Mosque in particular is completely funded through, and the trustees and their advisors, everyone is pretty much a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. So we're saturated here in Middle Tennessee, and it's important to understand their own document. If you want to look at the playbook, this is it. So,
I've got to interject here real quick. I've got to do a quick live read, and we'll get right back to you.
Okay.
There can be nothing more outrageous to an American than the idea of an innocent person being wrongly convicted of a crime they didn't commit. But as they say, sunshine is the best disinfectant. We're proud to welcome A Just Cause with Sam Thurman and Cliff Stewart to Tuesday nights on conservativenationmedia.com. Sam and Cliff take a hard look at what happens when the wheels of justice trample the rights of innocent Americans. These are real cases of real people who are actually innocent but who are wrongly convicted. Join us for A Just Cause, Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance, and we are talking to Kathy Henners, and we are breaking down the explanatory memorandum of the Muslim Brotherhood, and I'll turn it back over to you, Kathy.
Okay. So underneath Section 3 here, where they talk about how important the historical meaning of the Ikhwan in America is, and we said it goes back to probably 63, where the Muslim Brotherhood or the Muslim Student Association was founded. We know of a gentleman by the name of Saeed Qutb that was here in 1948. So the seeds were planted long before the 60s. They were kind of feeling out the environment, if you will, of this country to see what it would accept. And what's interesting is that he attended college at the Colorado State University, but made writings about how hateful and how disgusting this country was. So you think, well, if we're that disgusting, then don't bother coming here. But obviously that's not part of the plan. So along with the historical stages, they have different sections here. The first is called the stage of searching for self and determining the identity. Basically, that just means that their commitment to Allah and to recognizing the need to be a good Muslim, to fulfill the prophecy of returning to a caliphate. So the first two things, that and the stage of inner buildup and tightening the organizations, basically mean the same thing. But the role also is to make sure to secure the Muslim Brotherhood's role and position in the United States. So they need to tighten their organizations to make sure that the organizations are properly run and are manifested, and believe me, they are. C would be the stage of mosques and Islamic centers. And as we've said before, we see such an influx of mosques being built. There are thousands and thousands, and they're all over the place. They're all over the country. And what's kind of interesting is I got an email today about the Islamic Society of North America, which is basically you have the Muslim Brotherhood as the entire umbrella with all their organizations underneath. The Islamic Society of North America, or ISNA, would be the number one organization under that umbrella. And oddly enough, they're having what's called a masjid forum or a mosque forum in November at their headquarters in Plainfield, Indiana. And what they're looking at in this particular forum is actually setting the agenda for the masjid development, which is just one of the topics, but governance and leadership in the masjid. So they're really starting now to hone in on what the role of the mosque is under the Muslim Brotherhood. And there's a really good book out there.
Their military headquarters, essentially.
That's exactly what it is. And there's a good book called Mosque Exposed by a gentleman by the name of Sam Solomon, who is a former Muslim and a Sharia jurist at that. But he has converted to Christianity. Wonderful man. Wrote a really good book on mosques. But the funny thing is, they admit to a point that mosques are not just for their religion. And they had the Turkish prime minister when he was just here in May of this year, but he had made a statement that said the mosques are our barracks, the domes are helmets, the minarets are bayonets, and the faithful are soldiers. So we know that this goes back, way back in time, that they use them for special operations or military operations. That's basically the mosque is the headquarters or the center of a Muslim's life because it isn't just a religion, it's a complete way of life. So the mosques are a lot more than what they say. And what I usually tell law enforcement is when you go into a mosque, you can really learn about a year's worth of intelligence in 5 minutes by going into their library. You want to look to see what kind of books they have in their library because every mosque has one. They have all kinds of materials to give out to the kafir, which is us or infidel, to learn about Islam. So they have all kinds of material. The more radical the author, the more radical the material, obviously the more radical the mosque. So that's a really good place to start. If you want to know what your mosque is like. Most people will not go into a mosque. They'll say they're open for the community to go into, but very rarely are they there to allow that to happen. So keep your eye on a mosque. Yeah.
I have a question for you. I'm sure in what you've done in your past, at some point in time, you've been in several mosques, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you ever been in any one where you did you find any moderate ones? Did you find any not to be concerned about? I'm just curious.
No. Actually, the majority of the ones that I've been to are more what they call storefront mosques. They're just, basically a front for what they want to do in the back room, and they don't have enough money to build a huge, ornate building. That is basically a sign of victory. Every time they place a mosque, they're usually in interesting places, but basically they're signs of victories wherever they build them. So, now I can't say that I've ever seen a moderate mosque. And when you look at the other thing, the speakers, who their speakers are, who they're inviting. Now, the Islamic Center of Nashville, we know that's a Muslim Brotherhood mosque, but we know that their speakers that are coming in, Sirhaj Wahaj and Zaid Shakir, they are known Muslim Brotherhood sponsors and affiliates. So, you can only look at that and say, well, you're known by who you associate with. So, again, you have to really take a close look at what's going on within that mosque. Now, if you're invited to attend Friday prayer, which is called Juma, I can guarantee you they probably won't be having any radical speeches saying death to America and death to the Jews while you're sitting there. So, the flavor changes, obviously, when there's other guests there. So mosques are very interesting and a very telling part of this. So when they talk about the stage of building Islamic organizations and Islamic schools, they consider that to be a first phase, which obviously it is. Then they go on to say the stage of thinking about the overt Islamic movement, the first phase. So they no longer are considered, necessarily covert. They're becoming more and more over. And what they're basically saying is now it's time to basically come out of the closet, if you will. It's time to lay the plan of action down. And that's exactly what they're doing. It's no longer a silent movement. They're now flooding society with their ideology. It's everywhere you turn. And if you're not seeing it, then you need to open your eyes. Because
so surely in the red state of Tennessee, are the Tennesseans and the DHS, I'm sure they've got to be all over this. And, I mean, I'm sure they're tracking this memorandum. So, I mean, we don't really have anything to worry about here in Tennessee, right? I mean, these guys are on it.
I'm not supposed to laugh at this,
Bill Gibbons?
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, it's sad when you have government entities and, departments that are aligning themselves with, you know, these Muslim organizations. And we know, because we've talked about them before, some of the ones that are prevalent here in Middle Tennessee, actually, they're statewide at this point. But the one you're referring to is the American Muslim Advisory Council, who Bill Gibbons and the Department of Homeland Security have kind of paired with, and they're allowing them to specifically train law enforcement within the state of Tennessee. So, you know, you've got – it's sort of like letting the bad guys have the keys to the jail. You know, it's only one perspective, and it's their perspective, and it's called Dawah. It's the proselytizing of Islam, and it has nothing to do with – you know, what to look for when you go into one of their stores, that they may be operating a, something to get money for Hamas or Hezbollah. So they don't tell you these things. You know, even though there's crimes being committed in their own communities, they don't want to talk about that. They would rather talk about the religion. So, you know, it's very difficult to know that they're training law enforcement, but that specifically, AMAC is reached out to a lot of law enforcement. So that always gets me when we start talking about the relationship here. But Tennessee is unfortunately the ground zero for these movements. And I didn't know that before I moved here, by the way. I had no idea what I was moving into.
so much for retirement.
You're not kidding.
Before you go back to the memorandum, before you finish up with that segment, we got about 7 or 8 minutes left here. But since AMAC is instructing our state, our law enforcement, now are the materials that they're providing, is that something the public has access to? Is that something
No.
we can get?
No.
Really?
I can tell you right off the bat. Back in February of, I think it was February of 2012, or it might have been 11, there was a symposium that was involving the FBI, some U.S. district attorneys from Tennessee or, you know, this area, law enforcement, and a few other different type of agencies, FBI. They were all involved, and it was training specifically for law enforcement. And I know that people did try to find out, being that law enforcement basically is, you know, publicly funded, that they had a right to know what this training was. And to my knowledge, the public never really found out what it was. Now, we do have some idea of what was going on there. But again, from what I've heard and read from transcripts of things, it was nothing more than talking about their religion. It was not what I would consider useful training for law enforcement. So when you pull all these agencies together and you pull them out of their jobs to give them in-service training, it needs to be stuff that is useful that they can turn around, go back into the community, and actually use, not necessarily
right.
Being indoctrinated, if you will. But that's basically what it comes down to. And there are several other groups throughout the country that come back to Tennessee because they do a lot of training together that offer these courses. And, they've canceled classes on Islam from other entities, including one of mine, in different cities around the country because they feel that we're anti-Islam. So they've canceled that, and then they replaced that training with their own training. And that goes, you know, for the state police academies throughout the country, you know, any law enforcement training academy, you know, they're running the roost. They are really, they're the ones that are making the decisions who's going to train and how they're trained, which is disgusting, I think.
Yeah, it is. It's absolutely pathetic, absolutely disgusting. 718-305-7176 is the number if you have a question for Kathy. There's still one thing that you wanted to hit on the memorandum. Got a few minutes left. Was there that last point?
I think one of the most important parts, and we read this last week. It's on page 7. It's called Understanding the Role of the Muslim Brotherhood in North America, and it goes on to say that they have to understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the Western civilization from within. That probably is the most hostile statement throughout the entire memorandum. And when you really start reading this and rereading it, you'll understand, you know, it better. But you have to pull that out, that they're sabotaging us from within, and that is truly what they're doing. When you look at where they are, you know, they're penetrating the complete infrastructure of this country, government, education, law enforcement, military, and any of our religious entities. So that probably speaks volumes for the entire manifesto. Is number 4 on page 7, because that just tells you that they are coming from within. And as Gaddafi had said, we won't need war or guns and bombs to take over. We'll do it from within.
Yeah,
so
that sums it up. Everything else is the details, essentially.
Yeah, I would say pretty much that's it, you know. So. And then it continues. There's a lot. We got a lot to go over because there's several more pages of this. So you're stuck with this for a while, Dave.
Hey, no, that's people need to hear this. And if you're out there listening and you have a buddy in law enforcement, you have family in law enforcement, you know, you might want to ask them, hey, have you ever read of this document? Have you ever been taught about this? I mean, I know they go into depth on gang activity, you know, especially if you're a cop in one of the big cities. They're going to teach you, you're going to know gang symbols inside out. You're going to know all these different things to look for gang activity. I mean, they even do that in schools, that tell administrators and teachers, you know, what to look for, signs of gang activity. So why would you not want to instruct your law enforcement on what to look for to a group that has basically declared war on us? And it said
Absolutely.
That they want to take us over from the inside. So it's really frustrating and infuriating. And it's a shame that, you know, it's like one of the earlier topics tonight, earlier in this show, we were talking about the issue of life, and we're like, wow, we're a red state, but we can't enact any laws. And here we are, you know, we can't even defend ourselves because of political correctness.
We've opened ourselves up to this, so... You know, how do you retract it now? It's kind of too late. If, you know, unless we stop it now, there is no taking it back. I mean, we have members of the Brotherhood very active in the White House, you know. Somewhere down the road we'll be talking about Mohammed Alibiari, who is just got a promotion in Homeland Security, you know. So
And he's warning them about the Christianists. The big threat now is the Christianists, yes. Hey, we've got about a minute left, so I want you to blast real quick about your show on Friday. Tell them who your first guests are and kind of give them a little feel for it.
Okay, well, Daily Roll Call is premiering on this Friday, October 25th, from 7 to 9 Central Time, and it is going to be basically a show on what is happening in this country with the Islamic influence. We'll have segments that will talk to specific law enforcement. We might tell some stories, might tell them some tidbits, some things to look for, and we might break down the names throughout the course of the week, how to understand their names, the religion itself. But Friday, our first guest, seeing that the textbooks have been an issue here, is Dr. Bill Warner, who critiqued the textbooks here in Tennessee, and a lot of them, I should say, are also
5 seconds left.
Everywhere in the country. Okay.
Sorry. Hey, thanks for coming on, Kathy. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
Tune in Friday to hear, and we'll have you back here as well. Take care. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Bye.
Bye.
John? Hey, returning your call here. Who does he need to call, her or you?